This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham.
Exceptionally hot weather, cold weather, wet weather, windy weather. Does it seem like we've gotten more than the normal amount of all of the above over the past year?
Well, some parts of the country certainly have.
But if your memory is anything like mine, you may have trouble recalling what conditions were like last week, let alone over the past several decades. Luckily, this hour's guests have great memories, or at least have charts of weather trends that go back long before any of us were even around to notice if there were clouds in the sky. Professional climate watchers Stan Ulansky and Jerry Stanger making a return visit to address this fundamental question: is the weather changing? And if you have any other weather-related questions, we'll take those too, right after the news.
I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. What do you think is happening with the weather? If you're willing to share your answer, 888-WMRA-TALK is how to reach us by phone. In all numbers, that's 888-967-2825. How does the weather you've experienced over, say, the past year compare to previous periods? What so far has been the most memorable weather event in your lifetime? What do you recall about the weather stories your parents, grandparents, even great-grandparents once told you? And how do those stories compare to what you think is going on in our world today? 888-967-2825. And while we wait for your call, we're going to collect some insight from Stan Ulansky, weather scientist at James Madison University, and Jerry Stanger, director of the Virginia State Office of Climatology. Gentlemen, thank you both for making time for us.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Tom.
Dr. Ulansky, you first, if I could, before we even get to this issue of is the weather changing, I was hoping to start with another, maybe even more basic question. Could you please explain the jet stream?
Sure. It's a very, very important weather phenomenon. It essentially is a core of strong upper-level winds, hence the name jet stream. It was discovered, if you can call it discovered, during about World War II time when military planes were finding themselves with no ground speed at all. That is, their airspeed was different than the ground speed, and they realized that they were in a strong core of westerly winds. So it's a strong core of westerly winds that has importance in not only moving storms, but also in developing storms.
Why is it there?
Ooh, that's a more than just a one-minute question. It's basically due to differences in temperature gradients, which give us differences in pressure gradients. And when you have differences in pressure gradients, think of it like a hill. Water flows down a hill. When you have differences in pressure gradients, that moves air. So essentially, differences in temperature north-south causes pressure gradients, hence a strong core of winds.
And they add the rotation of the Earth, and you get a strong flow that lies roughly at the boundary between the cold air and the warm air aloft. And it also doesn't just flow straight west to east, but it gets these waves in it, these undulations in it that often translate completely around the globe. And sometimes the waves catch up with each other and either augment or detract from another wave. And this is actually one of the big features that caused the unusual behavior of Hurricane Sandy and the non-tropical storm that evolved from it.
Well, Jerry and Stan, I realize it's possible that I've just been paying more close attention to these things since the two of you have agreed to make occasional visits with us so that I'm collecting questions to ask you the next time I see you. But it really does seem to me, and I'm curious if it seems this way to anybody else listening, that in watching explanations of what's been happening with the jet stream over the past few weeks, few months,
Sandy, as you were mentioning, Jerry, certainly being an example, but even other times, it seems to me that it's moving a heck of a lot more than I ever remember it moved before, and it's moving into shapes that I see on weather channels on TV that I don't recall ever seeing before, at least not with this kind of frequency. Is something different going on?
Well, I wouldn't say it's different, but let's go back to what the jet stream is. It's a river of air. But as different than a river on land, which is confined to its banks, the jet stream is not confined by any banks at all. So that allows it to change its position. And it can form positions where it forms, as Jerry mentioned, great north-south bends that we call meanders. So these meanders, again, can be quite common as the season changes.
Well, it's perfectly normal for us to see all these distortions and changes in the jet stream. I think a lot of people are paying a lot more attention to it now than they used to. There's whoever thought we'd wind up having an entire channel devoted to weather. Mm-hmm. And now there's so much weather information that people have access to, TV, on the web and such. And a lot of people are more tuned to what's going on. There's a lot more products available. The idea of what's the jet stream doing is not so absurd as it may have been back when I was a kid, just a few years ago. And there was every now and then you get something pretty unusual that comes about, and you notice that. But there's no indication that there's any systematic change in the way the jet stream is behaving. It still is that. That river of air, Stan said, that responds to all the changes in the atmosphere.
Stan Ulansky, author of The Gulf Stream, The Amazing Story of the Powerful River in the Atlantic, is a professor of meteorology, earth science, and geology at James Madison University. Jerry Stinger is director of the Office of Climatology at the University of Virginia. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. If you want to talk anything about the weather, offer a theory, ask a question of our guests, you can reach us by phone at 888-WMRA-TALK or on our Facebook page, where, interestingly enough, we are listed as Virginia Insight. Jerry, you were talking a little bit about how Sandy was influenced by the Gulf Stream. Tell us more. Not the Gulf Stream, I'm sorry, the jet stream.
Well, the Gulf Stream, too, little bit.
Okay. Well, let's go to the jet stream first. This was an amazing storm, and some seem in your field to be saying it was like something that we have never had before.
It's certainly not anything that I've seen. I think Stan will agree with this, that it was something pretty unusual, at least within the realm of any memory that we have and any modern record keeping. Essentially, it interacted with what we call a short wave, a very steep, if you will, north-south loop in the jet stream that came across the country, and it was a very tight loop, and actually left the hurricane with essentially nowhere to go except to skirt the coast to the north and then turn sharply to the west, and that's a very unusual sort of track, and I don't think anybody has found a hurricane track that quite equaled that in the recorded history. So it was very unusual in that regard.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, it formed in the Caribbean and moved through the Caribbean area, but instead of being swept out to sea, it basically went for a long period of time almost due north. And as Jerry pointed out, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners, when they were watching the Weather Channel, noticed this. I mean, it was confined between the jet stream on one side and big pressure centers that blocked it. So it was like a tunnel. It was just funneled northward until it got to around the New Jersey coast, where it took a very, very sharp hook. So it had nowhere to go at that time.
And it also combined with two other storm systems?
It interacted with that short wave that I mentioned, which is probably what most people are thinking of when they think of it interacting with another storm
system.
See,
I think of a short wave as, Jerry, as an old-fashioned
type of
radio.
Yes.
So when it comes to weather, what is a short wave?
Well, like I said, the jet stream has these waves in it as it moves around the planet. And sometimes these waves extend over a long distance from east to west, or west to east, rather. And sometimes they get kind of scrunched up, and it just makes a real tight north-south sort of loop in the jet stream. So that's what we call a short wave. And these are smaller waves in the jet stream that can have a big effect on formation of storms. And in this case, it just happened to come through at just the right time to really direct this storm. And the thing to remember is Sandy was not a particularly strong hurricane. It was along the coast of the U.S., as I recall, it's Category 2 at most, and it quickly dropped down to Category 1 and really was not much of a hurricane as it skirted the coast and got up toward our area. And it got so far north before it was pushed out to sea by the jet stream, because the jet stream had this tight kink in it right there. It's really a case of happenstance, but as it turned out, it made for a very unusual event.
Okay, noting that I've already mentioned how undependable my memory is, which is why I'm relying on some people listening to share some of their memories at 888-967-2825. It seems to me that I hear the two of you gentlemen saying that this was an extremely unusual occurrence in what ended up being called Superstorm Sandy. Earlier this year, several months ago, back somewhere midsummer, we had this thing called a derecho, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, and that was a word that I'd never heard until we experienced that coming through Virginia.
Well, that makes two of us.
And other parts of the country. And it seems to me that I remember back in the early part of the year, around January or February, we were having what felt like very close to summer-like temperatures for a while. So what I'm curious about is how the two of you feel about this question, is the weather changing? Stan?
Well, the weather changes every day, obviously, but I think I've got a feeling for what you're trying to get at. Is it changing long term? And again, my gut feeling is probably, but it's more for right now anecdotal evidence. A scientist is not going to come out on a local news show and unequivocally say, yes, the weather is changing, because you have to gather data over the years. That being said, though, we look at the weather, more people are attuned to the weather. We're bombarded by information by the weather. You cannot pick up a newspaper, the Weather Channel, whether you watch USA Today or anything else, or read USA Today or any of the local talk shows, they're talking about the weather. So more people are attuned to it. But you can't necessarily link a warm winter to a drought condition, to a derecho, to a Sandy. Those are just isolated, separate events, isolated events. Could they all be related to a changing overall global pattern? Possibly.
Yeah, the question lies in determining what's sort of variability you might expect given a long enough period of time, versus some sort of what I call systematic variation, where things have changed in an overall larger scale sense. And the trick is trying to figure out what you're dealing with, and if there is some sort of systematic change, what is it? What has caused it? And what may or may not be driving the whole system? And we're just woefully short of information, and people can get lots of PhDs for this.
Yeah. How do you know, when do you know, if there's been a systematic change?
That's a really good question, Tom, and I think we should defer that for the next time we come to visit you.
Or we could defer it until after the break, because I'm not going to let you off that easy. Weather scientists Stan Ulansky and Jerry Stinger are here with us for the duration of this hour. And we will push them on this question of systematic change when we get back from the break.
riders on the storm. Into this house we're born, into this world we're thrown, like a dog without a bone, an actor out on loan, riders on the storm.
So with the help of the Doors, as well as weather scientists Stan Ulansky and Jerry Singer, we're trying to understand something more about storms, whether we're getting more than would be called normal, and what you think about it. As a matter of fact, to you listening, how does the weather that you've been experiencing in recent months compare in your mind to previous periods in your life? What so far has been the most memorable weather experience of your lifetime? Do you recall anything about weather stories that your grandparents or even your great-grandparents told you about? Do those stories compare in any informative way to what you think is going on today? 888-967-2825 is how to reach us by phone. And, Jerry, you get a bit more of a break because Dan has been waiting on the line and he has a different question than the one I'm going to give you a hard time about in a few moments. Dan, traveling somewhere on Interstate 81, thanks for calling in.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Your question or comment, please.
Yeah, but what you all were saying, that you don't really notice, can't say if there's a change or not, isn't the melting of the polar ice caps, which they got plenty of evidence of, a change in the weather, or is that not a change?
Well, that's definitely a change. There's no question about the fact that the polar ice extent has been going down. And not only has the extent of the North Polar Ice Cap been decreasing, but a lot of times a lot of the ice up there is not even as thick and robust as it used to be. So even when you look at the area of the sea covered by the ice, that's sometimes misleading in and of itself. So, yes, there has been some systematic change there.
I was referring
mostly to the idea of, are we seeing more storms? Are we here, say, in the U.S. or in Virginia, seeing more unusual events? And that's where it gets a little tricky. But you are correct about the melting of the North Polar ice caps, and I think
I could have sworn, Stan Ulansky, that Jerry was going to say, but there has been
no
significant melting of the ice caps before.
Well, he's correct. There has been melting of the ice.
Actually, he didn't say that. I just put that in.
Okay, I got that. But the key is you can quantify that. That's information that has been determined through satellite measurements over years and years. So we've got some data that shows a trend. The difficulty is when we start to deal with other weather phenomena that are more ephemeral, that is, are not seasonal as much, then you get into the complexity of the weather system. And the complexity of the weather system makes it difficult for scientists to isolate trends and to look at systematic changes. An analogy can be, ask your financial advisor, what's your mutual funds going to look like from a year now? I don't know if he can give you an exact answer. Why? Because the economics can be quite complex. Your mutual funds may go down if there's a political upheaval someplace. Same thing in the weather. There are so many variables that lend to the complexity that it becomes very difficult for us to become as reasonable scientists a definitive answer.
Dan,
more questions.
Well, before you do, I have a personal question for you that you do not have to answer, but I'm going to ask anyway.
Okay.
How old are you?
45 years old.
So in your 45 years of experiencing weather during this lifetime, here's a completely unscientific question I wanted to toss to you. Do you have any sense of whether things seem to be different in recent months than in earlier periods of your lifetime?
Say it again?
Do you have a sense of there being a difference in overall weather patterns? More storms, more extremes than at other points in your life?
I would say that that's a yes. That I would say that it seems that the thunderstorms are more intense, and it seems that, the weather seems different. Like, I've never noticed it being so warm in January. I mean, it could be just like you said.
This is Dan.
It's
Dan Ulansky.
Well, hi, I'm glad you called in. But let me ask you a question also. Are you, as you've gotten older, become more attuned to the weather? That is, when you were young, did you even follow the weather at all? So
right.
Could it be a factor that you're just more conscious of what's occurring?
Right. No, I definitely am more in tune because of the, like you were saying, the TV, the internet. Yeah, definitely more in tune.
Dan, thanks so much for...
And, of course, with my job, I'm a carpenter, and, you know, I work outside a lot. So over the past 15 years, I've been always watching the weather just to see what it's going to do today. And
Dan, we've got a bunch of other callers. Dan, hold on for me if you could. We've got a bunch of other callers waiting. Was your second question a quick one?
Yeah, it was a quick one. How long do you think it would take those polar ice caps to come back to the way they used to be 20 years ago?
No idea how we'd necessarily accomplish that. As far as trying to change the climate so as to alleviate some of that or hopefully change it back, perhaps. Boy, that's a great question, and I'm not sure that could be done within our lifetime or probably even your children or grandchildren's lifetime. But it is very interesting, actually, that the whole idea of sometimes things have an upside. The Canadians and the Russians are basically building icebreakers as fast as they can in order to make use of this newly opened up version of the Northwest Passage. So there's some people who probably aren't too terribly upset about it because they see an opportunity there.
Dan, thanks so much for getting us thinking. We're going to go next to Folks Run. Ed, you're joining us on Virginia Insight. Thanks for doing that. Your question or comment for weather scientist Jerry Stenger and or Stan Ulansky, please.
All right. Hey, yeah, I do disaster aid. I own disaster aid, actually. I go all over the United States when there's national disasters. I have since Katrina. Last year, maybe the year before last, I was in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, when the tornado hit Joplin, Missouri. I'm not real familiar. I never would have believed in global warming until recently. When I was growing up, I remember snowstorms where I would step off the porch and snow clear over my head. And I was wondering, what is going on? Do you believe that global warming is part of this?
Again, the complexity is tremendous. You can't make a direct link from global warming to a EF5 tornado in Tuscaloosa. People would like to do that because then they can assign blame. People want to assign blame because, therefore, it makes them easier to accept what happened. But let's get back to global warming. There's a lot of evidence that is showing that the planet is warming. If you warm the planet, you put more energy into the system. Think of it as putting in more high-octane gasoline to your car. So you say, okay, I put more energy into it. It should make the storm severer. But there's not necessarily that one-to-one link. There are many steps in between, and it's those steps in between that can lead to the problems.
Even when we look at the global warming, for instance, in this case, we're talking about taking the average temperatures around the entire globe and looking at those on an annually average basis to see what they're doing. And over the last 35 years or so, they have been going up very, very significantly. There's no, very little, if any, question about that. Now, the question is, how does that then relate to smaller and smaller scales, for instance? Well, it correlates pretty well with
when you're talking about smaller scales, Jerry, you're talking about
smaller
weather events.
Spatial scales. And well, when we get down to just in this case, let's just look at temperature. We're not even trying to look at specific types of weather events, but just keep it to temperatures. Well, for example, by the time you get down to the scale of the state of Virginia, you find that there's the changes in the temperatures in Virginia are not very well correlated with the global average temperature changes. So you already have a discontinent continuity, a disconnect between these two things, and that's just looking at temperatures over an entire state. So when you get down to the scale of fairly small-scale weather events like strong thunderstorms or tornado, the whole attempt to relate these just falls apart, unfortunately. We just don't have the ability to understand the atmosphere at that level of detail.
Jerry Stinger, one of the things that I have heard a number of weather scientists say, or people who study climate, is if it had not been for the increasing amount of greenhouse gases that have been going into the atmosphere even since the 1970s, so for the past 50 years, if none of that had happened, in fact, we would have been experiencing some global cooling, and that it is the increase in those warming gases that's caused things to go in the opposite direction. You're shaking.
I answer that with a different aphorism, which is if a frog had wings, he could fly. The whole idea being, we don't know that. We don't know what. We'll never know what would have happened.
But there's no question.
One problem with dealing with the Earth and the Earth's climate is it's hard to set up an experiment where you have a nice control, and then you have your modified version.
But there's no question that amount of greenhouse-type gas has increased phenomenally over the past
years. Oh, it has.
Years.
It has. We definitely –
And that's
definitely
certainly
a lot
associated
more
with increasing
gases.
Temperature.
That is associated – that we would certainly expect that the increases in temperatures we've seen and the increased greenhouse gas input are certainly related to what that's – what otherwise that would be overlain to, pardon my sentence construction, what that overlies in terms of what would happen otherwise, well, nobody knows. Nobody really knows that, because part of the problem is we don't have that complete an understanding of the Earth atmosphere system to be able to know why it would have been decreasing or increasing before.
You ask great questions, Ed. Thank you so very much for joining us here on Virginia Insight. Stan Ulansky, author of The Gulf Stream, The Amazing Story of the Powerful River in the Atlantic, is also a professor of meteorology, earth science, and geology at James Madison University. He's one of our guests. Sitting next to him, Jerry Stinger, director of the Office of Climatology for the state of Virginia. If you want to talk to either or both, we got a phone line open right now at 888-967-2825. Next to Massanutten, Randy, thanks for joining us. Your question or comment, please.
How you doing? Stan, got a question for you.
Okay.
Are temperatures of the oceans rising as well as the air temperatures? Does anybody...
Oh, absolutely.
Any study that?
Oh, there's a lot of studies have done that. They've set out... for years and years, array of buoys throughout the world's oceans. And what we're seeing is, again, a rise in temperature there. Not as much as in the atmosphere, but nonetheless, yes, they're linked together. And the problem becomes this. If you, for example, raise the temperature of the ocean, as you raise the temperature of the ocean, the ability of the ocean to keep the carbon dioxide in it, which is dissolved in it, decreases, so you put more carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, which means you accelerate potentially the greenhouse effect. So this is the concern of scientists. That is, you start one thing, another thing happens, and then you've got a runaway roller coaster.
The other problem – oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was saying, but they don't have any idea of what's causing the ocean temperatures to rise.
It's probably linked again to the increase in greenhouse gases. They all go together.
Okay.
The other problem regarding the temperature of the oceans is we have all these buoys, for instance, that are measuring the sea surface temperatures. Now, what we really don't know is what's going on with the temperature structure of the ocean as you go down. Because the ocean circulations have this tremendous ability to essentially pick up heat from the surface that's transferred from the atmosphere and then subsume it down into the depths of the ocean. So the question is, to what extent are the oceans warming up, not just at the surface, but throughout their entire depth? And the other thing is that water has an incredibly high heat capacity, far, far more than air. So you can actually put a lot of what we call heat energy, essentially, into that water that that you may not be able to measure directly. And one of the concerns is that what happens when the oceans have absorbed a lot of heat over a long period of time and have warmed up to great depths or all the way through their entire mass. And this introduces a lot of concerns and a lot of questions that we really can't answer right now.
But, Randy, it sounds like we got a basic answer to your question, and it was yes, the temperatures of the oceans are going up. Thanks so much for asking such a great question. Next to Afton, Barbara, thank you for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment, please.
I'd like somebody to address these politicians because I don't get into it too much, but why are they even discussing if it's global warming or not? Why are they just not protecting our world like we should be? We know that we're bad for the earth. So why can't we, you know, get it together and start protecting it? And secondly, you asked if we notice any weather changes. I don't think we get as much snow as we used to get.
Well, if you look at the snowfall, let me mention that first. The
state climatologist.
We have had some. If you go back in history, we've had some decades that have tended to be very snowy and other periods of time that tended to be not quite so snowy. For instance, a lot of the state a few years ago had the heaviest snowfalls on record. 2009-2010 was the snowiest snowfall season in many, many locations. I'm not sure exactly where you are, but in Charlottesville, it greatly beat the old record, which was set in 1995-96. But I remember as a kid growing up, the 60s, we could always count on school being closed a few days and having some nice days to build snowmen and throw snowballs and such. But then that wasn't quite so much a couple of decades later when we tended to have less snow. So that has tended to vary. And the thing is that with snowfall, it's a matter not just of temperature, but of moisture. You got to have the two together, cold and moisture, to get snow.
We're going to hit the break.
So
here
that's
just
a little
a
complicated.
And Stan Ulansky, it looked like you also wanted to respond to what Barbara was saying. Barbara, I think in essence, your remark was we have to take care of the earth no matter what.
Right. It doesn't matter why.
Okay, hold on, because we've got just a moment for Stan to respond to that.
Again, yeah, you're absolutely right. But why don't politicians do it? It's because of expediency. They just look at the immediacy. What's going to affect, to be honest, their electability? They're not looking long term. If you're only elected for 2 years, you're not going to be concerned about something that's 10, 15 years. Think about the supposedly fiscal cliff that's coming towards us. They haven't even addressed that.
I guess I'm going to keep my politics to myself, and we're going to continue talking about the weather in just a bit more than 1 minute. Thank you, Barbara. Some help from Creedence. Actually, at the time that song came out, I think they were still called CCR. But let me get to more current information. For more than 30 years, Stan Ulansky has been teaching meteorology and other earth science subjects at James Madison University. For a time, actually in the early 1980s, he also played the part of an on-air weatherman at WHSV-TV in Harrisonburg. For almost as many decades, Jerry Stinger has been studying Virginia weather from his post at the Climatology Office based at the University of Virginia. Today, he is director of that office. Let's go next to April in Basie. April, you're on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for Stan and or Jerry, please.
Well, greetings. This wasn't what I was originally planning to say, but I have to follow up on what you all and what Barbara were saying about the politicians. You know, you're right that they have a short-term interest in mind, and neither party is really speaking out very vigorously and courageously to deal with global warming. But I want to point out that never in our history have we had a major political party that denies science. Every single one of the individuals seeking the Republican presidential nomination denied global warming. And even though 97% of our top climate scientists say that it's happening, that humans are the main cause, and that it's very serious. But I wanted to also say that it's interesting. When I often hear a focus on a particular weather event, like Sandy. Is it caused by global warming? And I realize that you can't say with 100% certainty that any weather event is caused by global warming. But don't we know enough to know that to say that weather events like Sandy were made worse because of the warming ocean and the more water vapor in the air, and the droughts and fires in the West are made worse by the longer warm season where the bark beetles don't die off and they do more damage to the trees and they're more vulnerable and they burn. I mean, the evidence is abundant. Plus, all of us see that the weather's changing, it seems to me.
This is Jerry Stinger. If I may, I'll just say that some of the cause and effect that you just mentioned are a lot closer to one another than the whole idea of the average annual temperature of the globe as a whole. For instance, when we talk about global warming, it doesn't mean that everywhere got warm. It means that the overall temperature of the planet averaged worldwide has gone up. Now, there's some areas that have that actually in a given month may show some cooling. Overall, there's more warming than cooling, but when we try to look at how that systematically has changed in regard to certain specific events, drying conditions here, wetter conditions there, really we're beyond the limit of our understanding of the situation. Because, for instance, the idea is that the global climate change will present itself not just as temperature increases, but of some systematic alteration in ocean atmosphere circulation. And that then is what drives the more localized changes. So the answer is we really don't know or necessarily have a really good inference as to what the connection is between that and not just any specific event, but sometimes even clusters of certain events. It's very hard to explain on a short radio program, but there's a lot of connections that have to be made to really have a good handle on that at all.
Well, it sounds like you're very knowledgeable about the weather, and that's good. The problem is a lot of people aren't knowledgeable about it, and it's our role as scientists not just to convey information among scientists, it's to convey that information out to the public, make out that outreach so that people understand that there can be connections, albeit we're not well, we don't know them completely. And the reason we need to do that is we can't turn the atmosphere on and off. Once it gets going, it could lead to a runaway problems. So we're not just simply crying wolf to cry wolf. The evidence seems to be that, yes, there are changes. Can we give you exact links? No. But the more we can communicate to people like you who are knowledgeable about it and trying to get to other people, I think the better off we'll be as society.
April, thanks so much for your call. Next to Afton, this is Sam. Sam, thank you for joining us on Virginia Insight.
Thank you. My question is, I would want to know what kind of effects climate change and global warming is having on wildlife. and ecologies around the most affected areas?
I can give you just one example that I'm familiar with. We talked about that the oceans are warming. When you warm the oceans, you tend to also decrease the oxygen content. Warm waters hold less oxygen. And one of the studies done by a group of scientists down in Miami are showing that the range of blue marlin, an apex predator, a pelagic fish, is decreasing because of oxygen content decreasing off the coast of Africa. So as global warming increases, what we may see is migration routes of certain species may start to change, and they may have to adapt to new habitats. So I'm not an ecologist, but it is one example of changes in the environment affecting one particular species.
Yeah, a lot of the changes that are probably more easily linked with overall warming are those in the marine environment. We also know about the effects of higher temperature waters on the coral bleaching and coral reefs and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. So my understanding is some of the most clear examples of this are found in the marine environment. And I don't know of any good land animal situations to that have been so carefully linked to mention right now. I'm sure there's some, but I think the oceans have really shown the bulk of it.
Absolutely.
Next, we're going to Stanton. This is Alex. Alex, thank you for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for weather scientist Stan Ulansky and or Jerry Stinger, please.
Hey, thanks, Tom. I am a conservative, and I've been following the science on climate change and global warming for 15 years. I'm a plant physiologist by background. But I am really, really tired of hearing that conservatives or people who question the role of mankind in global warming or climate change are denialists of science. Because, A, the satellite record shows that we haven't had any warming in 16 years. When you look at the globe as a whole, we've had none. And when you look at the science of the debate, have we had warming in the last 500 or 1,000 years, even the scientists on the same teams disagree as the data comes in. So, for example, Michael Mann and his famous hockey stick has just been contradicted by Keith Briffa looking at additional data. So the real question is, science is not whether the climate changes or whether the globe warms. It has. It always has. It's what's the role of mankind and CO2 in this change. And questioning that and saying, wait a minute, the evidence doesn't indicate that mankind is really the major driver is not denying science. It's absolutely fundamentally rooted in the science. So this is a political discussion, and we shouldn't be surprised that politics come into it. But the claim that one side is denying science is absurd. It's just absurd.
Well, I don't think either one of us here today said that anybody's denying science necessarily. The question is, you mentioned the satellite-based record. The records that I have seen most recently indicate that if we go back, say, to about 1975 or so, which is really when we saw a big increase in greenhouse gas production, we do see a significant warming of the planet when you average the temperatures globally, annual average. Now, you mentioned the question of what's the ultimate driver of that, or what's the fundamental driver of that, you're correct. We don't know for sure what it is. We know that there's a signature there that looks distinctly human, distinctly related to the greenhouse gas increases. But as we mentioned earlier, I think Tom brought up the question, is this superimposed on a cooling, superimposed on a warming, or what would have happened had we not done that? And we don't know. So you're right about one thing, is there are a lot of questions to be raised, and I don't think that people who debate those issues are in denial of anything.
I'm pretty sure,
I think it's perfectly, that's what science is all about. But we do have a pretty good idea that the temperatures have been going up, and to say that it's likely that humans have affected that is certainly not far-fetched.
I'm so sorry that we apparently lost Alex's call because I wanted to ask him a question. I recognize Alex Avery's voice, a very interesting person who's been active in conservative causes for quite a while. But Alex, I can't give you a hard time because we lost your call, so we'll have to talk to you more another time. We've got a call now coming in from Bridgewater. I believe this is Dick. Dick, thank you for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment, please.
Yes, I'd like to make a comment about the weather in the valley. 30 or 40 years ago, the old timers then told me great stories about how every winter they and indeed their parents and grandparents prior to them were able to get ice made at winter sawed off ponds and rivers and streams. Enough that, you know, they'd have an ice house. They would have ice all year until the next winter. In the last 30 years here, we've maybe been able to get ice three times off of ponds and rivers, and then only for a short time. Back then, it was a much longer time, and ice was harvested and even sold. And so that's one clear evidence of how the climate has been changing. I grew up in Florida in 1964, my senior year in high school. We had five hurricanes hit the state. That is the only year that that has ever happened. Some of those names were Alma, Cleo, Dora, and I don't remember the other names. So there have been times when the hurricane season has been much more active than it has been even lately and hitting the U.S. So these are observations that I've made over the last 45 years or so.
Dick, thank you so much for sharing those with us. Before I ask our guest to respond, we're running a little short on time, so I also want to fit this in from Gregory, who wrote to us on Facebook, and he says, why don't we ever hear about the sheer amount of solar mass that we have created, adding to thermal pollution and global warming? By that, I mean streets, building, parking lots, roofs, etc. Stan, I'll let you choose whether you want to respond to Gregory or to Dick or both.
The interesting question about the solar mass. There's been quite a bit of the studies on that. It deals with what's called often the urban heat island, where particularly during wintertime, you see an increases in temperature in the surrounding, in the internal areas of the city compared to the surrounding. And part of that is due to, again, lighting and the ability of buildings and concrete to hold in heat. But that's dealing with a microclimate situation, not a global climate situation.
Exactly. If you look at the as I mentioned earlier about when we go to smaller and smaller scales, we see more of a disconnect between the local temperature record and what's going on globally. And certainly when we get down to the town or city size, we're definitely seeing a big disconnect because it's overwhelmingly driven by localized effects. So I've been asked the question is, of the flowers in my garden blooming earlier because of global warming? Well, the answer is that's probably not contributing very much. It probably has to do with whether or not your neighbor has the air conditioner hanging out over your flower garden, or whether or not somebody just
put a shade up.
Bulldozed the skyscraper that was next to you.
We're so short on time, and Mike has been holding on for a long time. Dick in Bridgewater, thanks so much. Your story about ice harvesting was absolutely fascinating. But our last call coming in from Stanton, Mike, you're on Virginia Insight. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, back in the 60s, 50s, when I was growing up, the Western Europeans who immigrated here believed that population control was the essential element and that we were uniquely in a position to do something about it, being a raw land mass that was huge and sparsely populated. If we had stopped populating as we expected to in 1960, we wouldn't have all these problems, and we would have been a good laboratory for that. Instead, we're using this global warming CO2, which the conservatives like that guy that called earlier can argue about, but we can't argue about the fact that too many people using the earth are going to use up things too fast and overcrowd it. And it became racist to talk about border control or population control.
Mike, we are out of time, but thank you so much for sharing at least part of your perspective with us.
Thank you.
I was just wondering, we had 10 seconds if you wanted to add something.
I'm just teasing. The problem you're bringing up is really a social, cultural, and religious issue that we just don't have time to deal with at this
and
level.
Back then, we never thought we'd cram so many people on the planet as we have since then. So
it's a good problem.
Our guests have been Jerry Stinger, director of the Office of Climatology at the University of Virginia, and Stan Ulansky, author of The Gulf Stream, The Amazing Story of the Powerful River in the Atlantic, as well as a professor of earth science at James Madison University. Gentlemen, thank you so much for making time for us.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Virginia Insight's executive producer is Matt Bingay. Our associate producers, Terry Ward and Bob Levicky. Some of our break music supplied by Robert Juspe and Inner Rhythm. You can find audio postings of Virginia Insight by going online to WMRA.org, then clicking on programs and then clicking on Virginia Insight. And if you go to that page, you will find links to more information about both of our guests. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more Insight.